Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hey, before we get into today's show, we're going to talk about cars and we're going to talk about TrueCar. So by now, you know that TrueCar can help you find a brand new car, but you might not know that TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster car buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features may not be available in all states.
For nearly 30 years, Todd Garner has overseen blockbuster films like Con Air, Anger Management, Triple X, 13 Going on 30, and Black Hawk Down.
Why are they letting you make these movies?
Join Todd as he shares tips and stories from the front lines of producing in Hollywood, right here on The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
Since the beginning of the movie business, there has always been movie stars. The difference between an actor and a movie star is subtle, yet also huge. Actors play multiple different roles. They can lose themselves in characters. They get lost behind makeup. If you are a guy like Andy Serkis, you're just wearing dots and you're creating these on your body and you're doing motion cap and you're creating these incredible characters. And then there's movie stars. And movie stars are always kind of are like 20% of themselves in every role they do. And that's what you want. You want to go and you want to see your favorite movie star, who the person that you identify with, the person you love, the person you have a crush on. Those are the people that throughout history, whether it's Audrey Hepburn or Cary Grant or Will Smith or Adam Sandler or Tom Hanks. I mean, you always go to the movies and you see these people pretty much being some version of themselves. Well, it seems as if now that the movie star system is pretty much dead. There isn't really a movie star anymore. Movies that have just the star in them and no huge idea are really not working in the theatrical marketplace anymore. And historically, that has been the thing as a producer that you needed to really take your movie and put it over the edge. You developed a script, you had somebody in mind, and you really went after them, and you tried to get that actor / movie star to commit to your movie, and that really would almost guarantee a box office opening, if not a box office success. But with the proliferation of Marvel movies and Star Wars movies and other huge IP and sequels dominating the theatrical marketplace, it seems as if that is really what the public is craving right now, that movie stars are made from these superhero movies. Movie stars are made through franchise sequels. And just the movie that stars the movie star is really heading to streaming or in fact not even working. And as you see now, big movie stars are really gravitating towards these big franchises. This past summer, we had almost entirely sequels and franchises and sequels to franchises being the only thing that was working. Original movies with quote-unquote movie stars like The Rock underperformed, and movies that just had movie stars that were originals didn't perform at all. And in fact, you saw big movie stars like Sandy Bullock being in sequels to big franchises, and those working great. So as a producer now, you have to really focus on what kind of content do you want to make? Do you want to make theatrical content? Do you want to make streaming content? Do you want to make content for other sort of streamers or independent financing through theatrical? And when you do that, you're really going to have to figure out what is the best talent to attach that's right for the movie, as opposed to what is the best talent to attach that you think might get you the best box office. And that opens up a lot of opportunities for producers, but also creates a lot of challenges in terms of how to get that IP, how to find those franchises, and how to make those movies. And I wanted to talk about the movie star system with somebody I thought really knew the system really well, and that's Krista Smith. She has been a reporter for Vanity Fair for a very long time, has wrote exposés and amazing articles on various movie stars and movies and changes and trends in the climate. And she is now the executive West Coast editor of Vanity Fair. And I thought there's nobody better to talk about movie stars and the movie star system to see what does she think? Does she think that the movie star system is dead? Is it evolving? Or may it, in fact, swing back? Enjoy. I'm here with Krista Smith. who's the executive West Coast editor of Vanity Fair.
Well done, Todd.
But you're probably the most important person in Hollywood, actually.
Oh, please.
Especially around awards time. When I'm sure... Do you have to turn your phone off when around the Vanity Fair invites start to go out? Because I would imagine there is like a panic of unequaled proportion of people wanting to go to the Vanity Fair party, especially this year.
Yeah, this year it was great. I mean, listen, it's a good problem to have. I mean, the fact that the party that was started, I don't even know how many years, like two decades strong, is still as viable and a good as time as it is a good thing.
I mean, it is, honestly, the touchstone party of the year, probably. Was it at the Annenberg Center this year?
Yeah, this has been our third year there. We take it over, do a whole thing, the drive up, it changes every year, but right. We use that location, which is great because it's kind of on the way home, on the way to after parties.
Right.
The flow is really nice. It's great that it's the Annenberg Center of the Arts and it's right. The Oscars. It all works.
I love watching because I follow a lot of my friends on Instagram that went. I love watching the time that they go from the Oscars to get their hair and makeup done, re-costumed, or whatever the phrase would be, rejiggered, and then go to your party. It's amazing. Like, it's a deal. Like, you can't just go in the outfit you wore at the Oscars. You got to wear something completely different for your red carpet.
I know, and sadly, I made that mistake. I wore my dress that I did on the red carpet, and I wore it right into our party. And yeah,
you and Tiffany Haddish.
I was not supposed to do that.
It was just the two of you.
Exactly.
Tiffany wore the same outfit she's worn the whole award season, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah, no, it is funny how that has happened. I mean, I think the whole business of fashion is like sport, really. Mm-hmm. And the depending on your preference, you can have three dresses, you know, one for the Oscars, one for the Vanity Fair party, and then another one for all the after parties.
Right.
So
what is the thought process that goes behind the invitation list?
Well, it changes every year because the movies change every year. And something that, you know, that happened along the way, which was suddenly we're going to have animated movies and we're going to have five of them. Remember when it was just, oh, wow, animation and there's three. Now that's a really competitive category. And then that changed when the Oscars went from 5 to 10. Mm-hmm. And this year, I think we had 9 nominations. And suddenly documentaries became the hottest category. Mm-hmm. So now you have 5 docs and short tracks. So the party grew with that.
And you also, to be fair, you have models and social media stars, and you do have a pretty good cross-section of celebrities.
Right. The first year we ever had it, I remember it was at the Old Mortons.
Yep.
And I was not tasked with, but my job was to help Annie Leibovitz, who was doing behind the scenes, which is just so funny to even say now, with her little, like, probably a contacts or something camera. And I was going to point out celebrities to her, right, just to make sure and to help her. And it was so funny because I remember sitting at that door at Morton's and I was like, Goldie Hawn, Deborah Winger, Prince, De Niro. There was just like everybody in that kind of famous saying, as I always repeat, I'm the only person I didn't recognize in the room.
Yeah.
So it started off as just that. But then as the business has grown and as it's been disrupted, you know, we have people from Silicon Valley there. We have models come in and brand people come in. And there's some, you know, maybe a big advertiser is in there. Apple's there. You have all the billionaires in there. And then you do have your movie stars.
Well, that is exactly what I want to talk to you about today. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the disruption of the content business, movies and television, and how social media and billionaires in Silicon Valley and models and everybody have disrupted the business, and where you see the movie star system going and kind of where you see the future of the business headed in terms of celebrities and marketing and how movies are consumed and content is consumed. So first of all, I want to talk to you about when you were doing that bit. How did you get started?
How did I get started? I got started answering phones. I mean, I got
at Vanity Fair?
The hard way. I started as a fact checker, freelancing, just moved to New York. A friend of mine, a roommate from, you know, that story, two, three, four, five people down the line, and you end up at an entry-level job. And I started in New York, and I worked my way up, and then I moved out here.
Did you know you always wanted to write?
No, not at all. I never wanted to write. It was Graydon, actually, Graydon Carter, who recently retired in December. He had said, write like you talk. I've always been a storyteller.
Right.
And he was like, you need to write like you talk. Just don't worry about the commas and the
right.
dangling, everything.
Right. I have no idea what either of those things were.
Right, okay. Right. Dangling modifier, run-on sentences and all that stuff. He's like, don't worry about that. We have editors to fix that. You
right.
know, just tell your story and write in your voice. So that's really how I started doing it.
What was your first story?
Reese Witherspoon.
Wow.
Well, my first.
And you're still really good buds with her.
Yeah. Well, it was her first cover story and my first actual real cover story.
Wait a second. Your first writing gig was a cover story?
Pretty much. I mean, I had done a spotlight on Jenna Rollins because I was a super fangirl right. of Jenna Rollins and Cassavetes and all of their films. Mm-hmm. And we did a spotlight on her. And so I wrote that, but that was like 250 words.
What year was that?
That was right before Reese, and I think Reese was in 2002 or something.
So 2002, the movie star business is in full swing. I mean, people are making $20 million and 25% of the gross, and Reese is probably at that time ready to explode into her mass.
I think the only person making $25 million at that time was probably Will Smith, right?
And Mel,
right.
I mean, I think Jim Carrey was the first, and I think Bruce and Mel were really close behind, and then Will, mm-hmm. and then Arnold. And then then the floodgates opened. So at that time, like you said, you're at the Vanity Fair party and you're having to point out celebrities to Annie Leibovitz. It's the full-blown star system. What was Hollywood like for you at the time, being at Vanity Fair, kind of the center of the universe in terms of movie stars and movies and culture? What was that like during that kind of heyday of the movie star business?
Well, it was really it's the myth, right? You're selling the myths. You're selling the movie stars. You're selling this narrative that people want to go and see a Tom Cruise movie. Mm-hmm. That was really how you identified films. Mm-hmm. And then when someone like you mentioned Mel Gibson, who got himself in some hot water, you know, over the past decade. But before that, Mel Gibson was this Australian guy that was in Mad Max, and then they remade it, and he became this phenomenon, and then became a director, and Braveheart. I'll never forget him coming in his limo with bagpipes playing, and he's outside of the roof of the limo holding his two Oscars, and the fans are going insane on the street. And he's, you know, some bagpipers playing, and it was just this kind of magical time. And I think that movie stars, everything has changed. It's like death by a thousand cuts, basically.
Right. Hey, before we keep going with Krista, I want to talk about something just as important as what Krista and I are talking about, and that's underwear. Yep. Everybody needs it, not everybody uses it, and everybody should be using it. And they got to be comfortable, so you should get some MeUndies. MeUndies stay put. There's no moving around. There's no jostling. There's no juggling. And they come right to your door. You can get a matching pair for your partner also, so you actually will look like your partner in your underwear. How great is that? And you'll like them. There's a no-risk offer, and if you're not happy, they'll refund the cost, and you get to keep them. And because you're listening to me, you get 15% off your first pair and free shipping. Go to MeUndies.com/producers. That's MeUndies.com/producers. And here's an extra gift for you. You order a pair, take a screenshot of your transaction and send it to me, and I'll send you another pair. You get one for 15% off, and then another pair from me, free. The first 25 people to send a proof of purchase, a screenshot of your purchase, or of the receipt, and I'll send you another pair free. Just send your proof to gift@podcastone.com, put producers in the subject line, and you will soon have another pair in your collection. Let's do this. MeUndies.com/producers.
Shut it down!
Hi, I'm John Taffer. You probably know me because I've rescued thousands of bars, hundreds of them on TV.
That's your future broken!
I'm also a best-selling author, and I've owned and operated a bunch of other businesses. But now, I'm here on Podcast One with my new show, No Excuses.
I only yell at assholes.
Every Tuesday, I'm going to give it to you straight. I'm giving you all things bar rescue, insider peeks of what's going on the set, current events and topics you care about, with in-your-face analysis, and you know how straight I can be. And I'm going to have unforgettable guest interviews with the world's most interesting people, and I'm going to ask them the questions that nobody else has ever asked them. And yes, sometimes I can be a bit of an ass, but I'm going to shut it down every Tuesday and make no excuses. It's going to be the number one show here on Podcast One. Listen to it every Tuesday on PodcastOne.com, on the Podcast One app, and on Apple Podcasts. And remember, rate and review it, or I'm going to shut you down.
I'm John Hurwitz.
I'm Josh Heal.
And I'm Hayden Schlossberg.
And we're the creators of the new YouTube Red series, Cobra Kai.
Right here on The Producer's Guide.
With Todd Garner.
You guys were really protective. You also are really good friends with a lot of big huge
over
movie
time.
Stars.
Over time, I mean, you know what's?
But like, you love Hugh Jackman, for example.
Right? Yeah, Hugh Jackman. I love talent. Let's
right.
be clear about that.
That's true.
I love talent.
And you guys, and Vanity Fair always was very good at being honest and almost in that kind of Barbara Walters way of being honest. But it wasn't like a rag. It wasn't like trying to tear people down. You guys always were a great place for movie stars to kind of really build up and kind of, like you said, to portray that myth as a way. And, you know, it wasn't like a demystifying thing like it is now, not the Vanity Fair, but I mean the world. So at that time, it was sort of this very romantic, amazing, like people didn't have access to celebrities. You guys got in there and got really in-depth and really close and told a lot of personal stories. What was that like for you as just a journalist and somebody who was kind of making their way? Like, what did you learn about movie stars and the kind of whole system when you were a young journalist?
Well, I loved movies. So I grew up always watching movies with my dad. I've seen every World War II movie there ever was. You know, so it was in my DNA, movies, theater. I always gravitated towards that. And there was Hollywood. I remember when I first moved here, someone said, you know, read Variety. That was their advice, you know, mm-hmm. to kind of get into the business and understand the language and the rhythms of Hollywood. And you saw how these stars were made. I mean, that's, for me, I remember seeing, I'll take Sandy Bullock, for example. So Sandy Bullock, I had seen, I had known about Sandy Bullock as a friend of mine from college who had like dropped out and became an actor, moved to, you know, did the whole thing, right? Came to Hollywood, had done a couple movies with Sandy. And so I was still in college and I had met her when I came out to visit on spring break or something. So she seemed really cool or whatever, but she wasn't where we think of Sandy Bullock now. And we were looking to do a Vanities, which is that first open. It's called the Vanities opener. And we always called it the second cover. And I remember weighing in. I said, well, we should do this actress, Sandra Bullock. She's in this movie, Speed. And I think it's going to be great. And I've always been a lifer for Keanu. I mean, love Keanu. And he knows it. We've talked about it. We've discussed it. So it's out there in the public. But anyway, it was like, you know, we should do Sandy Bullock. And we ended up obviously doing Sandy Bullock. Speed became Speed. Then Sandy Bullock, we were doing the first Hollywood cover. And I was in charge. I'd seen this movie, Down to the Bone, I think what it was called. I'm going to forget it right now, but it was the one with Dennis Quaid and Gwyneth Paltrow. I was like, this actress is so good. Who is this girl? It's Gwyneth Paltrow. I had seen one of the greatest death scenes ever, Hand the Rocks the Cradle. Who's that redhead? She's amazing. It was Julianne Moore. So I had helped put together that cover. And my panel in particular was the last one, which was Angela Bassett, Julianne Moore, and Sandy Bullock. So you had a certain vested connection.
Yeah.
Vanity Fair had a connection mm-hmm. with this talent and supported them along the way. And I go back and I look at my vanities, and it's everywhere from Russell Crowe, Tom Hardy, Keira Knightley, Natalie Portman, Amy Adams, Elizabeth Banks. The list goes on and on and on. And so we established this relationship with the artists.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the business of the town in terms of the Oscar party and celebrating the biggest night in Hollywood, right? So I think Vanity Fair has always had that symbiotic relationship to the business, although the magazine really is not all Hollywood, you know?
Mm-hmm, no.
It's a quarter of it or however you want to divide the pie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of politics, mm-hmm. a lot of about media and the economy, and now a lot about tech,
mm-hmm.
and really just a quarter of it is mm-hmm. Hollywood.
So what do you think is the difference between a movie star, an actor, and a celebrity? Like what are the defining characteristics of those three things, do you think? Because, I mean, there's obviously huge celebrities, and there's a lot of great actors, and then there's very few movie stars. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you, the one person right now that is all three is Jennifer Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that mm-hmm. has all three of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And before her, you would say, well, it's like a Tom Cruise. It's mm-hmm. like there are certain people that had to embody all of that
mm-hmm.
to push through the plexiglass to be an actor, you know, a celebrity, and also a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a tough question. I mean, there's some brilliant actors, and a lot of them don't want to be movie stars. They're not interested in being celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's someone we talk about, Reese Witherspoon, who's like taken Hollywood and just like it's her. She owns it now. And it's incredible how she turned, you know, she made up her mind and decided to like, oh, hey, I'm going to go into these different, you know, spokes of Hollywood and I'm going to crush all of them. Because she had, what, 3 decades of experience in acting since she was 11.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a big difference. One is just an actor who is an actor, who comes in and they're different in every role. Or they're always good. They elevate whatever you're seeing, they elevate. You may not like the play, but they're always good. You may not like the movie, but they're always good. You know, you miss them when they're not on screen. They're just a really, really, really good actor. A celebrity can be anything from, I guess, maybe the Kardashians are celebrity. Politicians can kind of be celebrities. Sports figures can be celebrities. You know, that is a word I kind of hate because it encompasses everything. Someone with, you know, 500,000 Instagram followers is a celebrity. And a movie star is that rare. It's that rare thing where you can't take your eyes off of them. People want to see them. People want to be them. People want to hang out with them or their perceived version of whoever that person is.
Right. And then getting to what you were saying earlier about the business is the business has shifted because it doesn't necessarily equate to box office any longer in terms of openings. Nobody, Jennifer included, really is a guaranteed opener anymore just because they're in the movie. Like you said, it used to be that there was a Tom Cruise movie and you went, well, screw it. I'm going to go see it. It's Tom Cruise. I love Tom. We're going to go see it. Everything is so watered down now in terms of there's so much content that the content really has to shine on its own, you know, and if not, then no movie star really can propel it. So I think it's more about what you're saying of just in terms of a feeling more than an actual hardcore business decision in terms of somebody specifically like Jennifer, who I believe is absolutely a movie star and is all three. It's just interesting now that I think the movie star system has really sort of kind of gone away, especially in the world of Marvel, because, you know, if you look at the Avengers, the new Avengers movie, they're all movie stars and weirdly in their own right, you know, including the new all the new stars from Black Panther, which I think has made it so that you can actually have like a Tomb Raider come out, you know, and suddenly like after 2 movies, she's now carrying a movie, Alicia. And so what's your thought on kind of when you guys are looking at the landscape of the movie business and kind of how you are trying to decipher who you are going to pay attention to, how does this whole Marvel hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of great actors being in these movies affect the way you kind of look at how to promote your magazine?
Well, you know, there are certain things that are in the Vanity Fair wheelhouse, a Vanity Fair movie, let's say. You know, what's Leonardo DiCaprio doing in 5 years?
Right.
That's probably going to be a Vanity Fair movie. Jennifer Lawrence oftentimes, oh, that's a Vanity Fair movie. Let's focus that. So there's part of that which we know our readers and our audience.
Would that be more – I'm sorry to interrupt you. Would that be more of an adult – like The Revenant is like a perfect example and
– Exactly.
And you know, and Mother, even though it wasn't a commercial success, feels like it's more of an adult,
smart.
Yeah,
Red Sparrow definitely was, you know, one of those adult, smart, complicated. But that doesn't mean we don't want to do the other stuff. And I think when the Marvel thing is interesting because it really boils down to the very first one, and that's Robert Downey Jr. And I give him all the credit.
Who's a movie star?
He is a movie star. And when he did Iron Man. And I've rewatched this stuff. I mean, I saw it once when it came out in real time, but I have 2 boys and I've rewatched all of it and I've seen it multiple times now and I see where what they respond to and what they like. But none of that would work if you didn't have someone of his talent doing that part. And I think that's where that is like basically that's the seed and then everything else grows from there. And then you get something like Black Panther, which was just phenomenal. I mean, brilliant filmmaking, brilliant acting. But it comes out from that model. And obviously, there was a cartoon, Black Panther. Ryan Coogler, I was a huge fan of his. I was the first person ever to do press on him with Fruitvale and with Michael B. Jordan. So that doesn't surprise me that he made an incredible movie. And I just think we're going to look at that film, and by that film, all other films go. It reminds me of like Jaws.
Right.
Must have happened.
Yeah.
I mean, I was, thank God, too. I'm not old enough to know Jaws in real time, but
I am.
But it is that thing where suddenly Jaws came
yes.
out. And it was like movie making was different. And I think
yes.
what he did with Black Panther, suddenly everyone's like, oh my mm-hmm. God, you know, movies.
Yeah.
Movies will be different.
Or Star Wars.
Star Wars, exactly, mm-hmm. be moving differently. So we absolutely would cover some Marvel. We just did earlier this year in January. We did four covers when we had all the Marvel characters on them. We completely embraced it. We were in Atlanta. We were part of that mm-hmm. machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great story. We talked to Kevin Feige. So we find our way into it where we know our readers are going to be interested in it.
Right. Hey, let's take a break from Christopher for a second to talk about brushing our teeth. Look, most of us are brushing our teeth wrong. We're either brushing not long enough or we forget to change our brush on time. That's because most brands focus on selling flashy gimmicks rather than better brushing. But not Quip. Quip is an electric toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes while still packing just the right amount of vibrations to help clean your teeth. Quip's built-in timer helps you clean for the dentist's recommended 2 minutes with guiding pulses that remind you when to switch sides. Their subscription plans are for your health, not just convenience. They deliver new brush heads on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. Quip also comes with a mount that suctions right to your mirror and unsticks to use as a cover for hygienic travel wherever you take your teeth. And the last thing you need is unhygienic travel, because I have done some unhygienic travel, and let me tell you, there is a long series of injections that you need to get over it. They were on Oprah's O list, named one of Time's best inventions, and the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. Plus, Quip is backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists, and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers use Quip every day. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/producers right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/producers, spelled GETQUIP.com/producers. And in terms of your perspective, like I would imagine a movie like Get Out, for example, is perfectly in your wheelhouse mm-hmm. in terms of like just somebody completely reinventing himself in terms of what people thought he was, and you know, a great comedian and a great comedic writer and actor, to completely reinvent himself into this auteur and breaking all these new acting talents and getting these performances out of people. It also feels like that's the new kind of movie star, too, is like when you find a person.
Creators.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people that are creating something new. Like, that's why I think Guillermo was so embraced mm-hmm. this year, because that's a guy who's really been fighting for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on kind of the front lines of, like, you know, not ever changing his vision, completely just kind of coming into his own. I made Hellboy with him, you know, and so I was talking to Doug Jones the other night, mm-hmm. and I said, you know, it's nice that Abe Sapien found a girlfriend, but it is like Guillermo had this vision of this fish man and stuck with it and knew there was more to tell in terms of this, in terms of this idea and this story. And I just admire that so much, to just have that singular vision like Jordan had for Get Out for so long.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you're really talking about is consistency and authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
So Guillermo has always been that person, whether mm-hmm. it was Pan's Labyrinth or Hellboy or any of the movies, Pacific Rim, anything that he created, you mm-hmm. were in that world.
Mm-hmm.
You, maybe the movie wasn't for you, maybe the tone or the story you didn't respond to, but you couldn't deny the world he created. And I think what he did with Shape of Water hit everything.
Mm-hmm.
It hit the universal story, a love story. It dealt with race. It dealt with the time. It dealt with almost immigration and mm-hmm. foreigners, whatever, all boiled into, you know, woven into 2 hours. So, but he's always been Guillermo, and he's a lovely guy. Mm-hmm. And you look at, you know, when you talk about Jordan Peele, same thing. It's like he took a story that he knew well, that he wanted to write. He had this idea in his mind, and he made it comedic. And but it is, at the end of the day, a genre movie, which
yeah.
is so incredible about it. And mm-hmm. I rewatched it because I knew I was going to be interviewing him on the red carpet. I was like, I saw that movie in real time, and I wanted to go back and really look at the filmmaking of it. It was incredible. I thought it was going to win, actually. I knew Guillermo would win Best Director, but I actually had put money on it that Get Out won Best Picture, but it didn't.
There's not a wasted shot in that movie. Mm-hmm. Every shot is so specific of the story he wanted to tell. And again, he talked about – I went to an Academy screening of it. That's how much I wanted to enjoy it. So I actually went – Ron Howard hosted it. And he talked about it took so long to get made that he had every shot planned in his mind of how he was going to tell the story, which is exactly what you're saying about somebody who's sticking to it and being authentic.
And it was also another movie where I saw the posters on bus stops and whatnot. Get Out. What's Get Out? What's Get Out? Like it didn't have a massive marketing machine behind it. There wasn't one actor stumping for it forever or doing magazine covers in the traditional way or going on talk shows. It just kind of came out and it was a word of mouth. And that word of mouth became a wildfire and lasted an entire year. I mean, that movie came out a year ago on the weekend of the Oscars, 2017. And there he was 1 year later with a nomination for Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Screenplay. It's kind of unprecedented.
Yeah, it is unprecedented. And so you're really on the inside in terms of you have such a unique vision of seeing how this machine works because you're dealing with publicists and you're dealing with everybody trying to be on their best behavior, get their message out, tell their story. And one thing you keep talking about is talent and authenticity. So when you are so ahead of the curve, have you found that your skill of kind of saying, I think that movie's going to work or I think that person's going to break out because you see the authenticity and the talent? Describe like tell us a story of where you've had the right instinct and then maybe the wrong instinct.
Oh, I've had plenty of wrong instincts. I don't like to remember those.
Those are the best ones, though. We have to talk about those.
There is an X factor that you have to have in Hollywood. I mean, people talk about the obvious stuff. You know, luck is when opportunity meets preparation. And, you know, you have to be lucky and smart at the same time. Or sometimes you're lucky, sometimes you're smart, and sometimes you're both. But you have to, above all, you have to have skin as thick as a rhinoceros. Mm-hmm. You have to have tenacity. You have to have an ability to endure because this business takes such a personal toll. And it gets to part of your thing about Netflix, why people love, you know, I want a movie at Netflix. I don't have to hear about how no one at the box office came and saw it. And I can still get an Oscar nomination out of it. And there's still billboards for me and whatnot. So there is a real personal toll. And as an actor, when you're coming up through the ranks and the rejection and not getting the part that you thought you were going to have, I mean, the lore of Hollywood is... You know, there's a lot of those stories. Tom Selleck was supposed to be Raiders of the Lost Ark, all that stuff. But I think for me, when I'm looking at talent, I look at, obviously, you have to be talented. And I feel like you can't hide talent. And it's something like to see Winona Ryder, for instance. Okay, so Winona Ryder is my generation. I remember that face. Oh, my God, she was so gorgeous. She was everything from the kind of teen movies, then on to the young adult films and onto reality, but all of it, on and on and on. And then she kind of went away for a while. And everyone's like, whatever happened to Winona Ryder? And then, boom, she comes right back with a huge hit show because she has that. I would say the same thing for Keanu. Look at Keanu. Yeah. He came on My Own Private Idaho. The stuff he did with Gus Van Sant was so great. Then all of a sudden he was The Matrix. It was amazing. Then he went away for a while and this little movie no one even knew what to do with, John Wick. Okay? So you can't hide talent. Talent has a way of cycling through time.
Right. And I will say what you and I were talking about before about Netflix was – I think that most actors get into the business because they want to act. They want to create characters. They want to move a lot of people. And then I think over time, the business takes over, right? So you're stumping for grosses. You're stumping for opening weekends. Your worth is validated by what the box office is, not what the role was necessarily. Yes, you have the Oscars. I'm not talking about the rarefied eight that get nominated. I'm talking about every day just grinding it out, doing the work and for the love of the game. And so what you and I talked about was I've known a lot of actors who have gone to Netflix who on that opening weekend don't have that gross stomach ache or worse because the movie didn't meet expectations or didn't or fell off or is considered a bomb. Or as I've talked to, every producer in here has a movie that opened against a movie that no one expected to be the juggernaut that it is. For example, any movie that's opened against Black Panther got crushed because nobody saw it coming. It's not the fault of any of the movies. Game Night is a great comedy. I think Tomb Raider is a great action picture. They're putting out great quality against this a Wrinkle in Time, Reese's mm-hmm. movie. They're putting out these great movies. It's just this thing is just a monster. It's like the Titanic going through there. And so what I find is that people find the love of acting again. It's like, fuck it. I mean, I'm finding an audience for it, right? People are seeing it by the millions. And I don't have the stomach ache of like, well, it was supposed to open at 20 and only did 18, so below expectations. And then, by the way, those expectations are already managed anyway. So it's a really interesting – for actors specifically, I think, too. Netflix and, like you said, Winona being on Stranger Things is a great place to kind of find that love again without the pressure of the business that we kind of throw on them. And so they can go and do publicity with a band and kind of just – if the work is good, get rewarded for it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a different model and you know how people watch things now. When you know, is it events? I mean, people want to go see Black Panther because people don't want to miss out. They want to know what everyone's talking about. My kids want to see it again and again and again.
Right.
So right, that's unexpected. But I do think that the way you know, it's kind of like with publishing. When I talk to kids coming out of journalism school, I'm like, look, you know, yes, publishing is going through a disruption. Right, there's all these kinds of different you know, oh my God, this magazine's closed. This, no one's newsstand, all this stuff. But it's never been a more exciting time to be in journalism,
right.
Frankly. And how great is it that, you know, when I came out of college, there was only a few jobs. Like either you're going to go and be a page at NBC, you're going to try and work at Condé Nast or the New York Times, and maybe, you know, your hometown if you're from Chicago or something. But I was from Denver. Where am I going to go,
right.
You know? So I think that now there's opportunity everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think it's really, really exciting. And if you have an idea and if you have skills and if you have the talent, if you have the wherewithal to make it happen, you can do great things.
Yeah.
And that's where it's exciting. I know monetarily, you know, sadly, there's no more money.
Well, we all talk about it. So I think on both sides of the content loop, right? So whether it's journalism or visual content, I think it's all the same thing. I think people just want to be part of the conversation, whatever that conversation is. If you write an incredible story, everybody reads it, people want to talk about it. They want to be part of the conversation. They don't want to miss it. And so they don't necessarily want to wait for Vanity Fair to hit the newsstands. They want it when they want it, right? So a friend of mine said there's two kinds of free. There's free beer and there's free speech, right? So the free beer, like you go to a bar, oh, you got a free beer, great. I get something for free. But free speech is something different, which is people just want to have it when they want it. They're willing to pay for it, but it's in a different way. And so I think it's the same thing about movies and television is if it's ubiquitous and you can get to it easy and it's a fairly low cost point that you can get it when you want it, then everybody can be part of the conversation. People didn't want to miss Black Panther because everybody was talking about it. Get Out, the same thing. And so I think that these movies and stories and things that hit the zeitgeist, people want to just be a part of it. And they're willing to go find the content. It's just going to be consumed in a completely different way because it's not going to be, oh, shoot, I got to wait till next weekend to see it. Or I was talking to somebody today where you went every day to get the Daily Variety, right? You went down to the newsstand or the coffee shop or it was delivered to your desk and you opened it. And so everybody at like 8:30 started to get the news at the same time. So by 11, if something was good or bad, you started getting the calls kind of at the same time. Now it's 24/7, but I think people still want to be part of the conversation. You still want to see, okay, well, Weinstein Company declared bankruptcy. Everybody knows that now, and everybody wants to be able to talk about it. So I agree with you. I think there's never been a more exciting time, but it is actually one of the reasons why I did this podcast was, I've told this story a couple times, Marty Bowen and Ori Marmer, who works for Neil Moritz, mm-hmm. and I were in Atlanta. And one or all of us were like sitting there, we were having a beer, and I think Marty might have said, man, the movie business is just kind of going around. It's really tough. And I stopped and I said, Marty, you have 8 movies in post. 8. And Ori, you're producing Passengers with Jennifer Lawrence and Christopher Pratt, and you have the Fast franchise. And I have 4 movies in post. Like, what the hell are we talking about? If we, the 3 of us, are perpetuating mm-hmm. that rhetoric, nobody has a chance. Like, there's nobody that's going to think, well, let's go do that business because it's not dead. It's just, it's like you said, it's being disrupted and it's changing. And I think it's a really cool time to try and do it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it'll be interesting. I do think that the movie theaters, like that experience, and I took my kids to see Tomb Raider this weekend, and I love the one with Angelina Jolie. It was always like a fun popcorn movie, and I especially with 2 boys, I wanted them to see a woman, you know, leading an action film. And there wasn't that many people in the audience at all. And I thought, wow, this is incredible. You know, I remember when, you know, how different it has changed since the last one starring Angelina, how different the business is. So I do worry in terms of that formula of a movie coming out in a big theater, you know, the Cineplexes with 16 screens or whatever, what is that going to look like? Because you don't always, once a year you have one of those big movies. You know, Dunkirk in the summer was an excellent film. You had Get Out that was like the engine that could, you know, and obviously Black Panther, but it doesn't happen every weekend or every month.
And I think that if you give people a chance and an easy access to being able to consume the content, they'll pay for it. And again, they just want to all be part of the conversation at the same time. And so when you have Black Panther that's sort of sucking up all that demand for getting out of the house and going, because it's an effort to do that, that I think that all those other movies are suffering because of that. I think if it would have been – if there would have been premium VOD for Tomb Raider that weekend, they would have had a massive weekend because there's plenty of demand for it. People are just not – if they're going to make a choice – when there's this big, huge cultural phenomenon in the marketplace, they're going to choose that because people aren't going to the movies every week. It's just not – it's not reasonable. There's too many other things you can do. So you have to make it easier. When that happens, you have to pivot and make it easier for people to enjoy your content. Otherwise, you end up like Toys R Us. We're like, no, come to our store. You know, and then Amazon's like, or the toy could be delivered to your house. Yeah. So I feel it's the same way. And I think that if – if, as you know, and studios will figure it out. And the biggest, I think the biggest fallacy that's being pitched to us, me and you, people that are in the business, is that the home video market's dead. It's not dead. It's a $70 billion business that's in one company in Beverly Hills right now called Netflix. Basically, the studios just gave home video to this one company and created a $70 billion business behind it and have taken it all. So slowly now, Bob Iger has woken up and people are starting to wake up and say, well, no, we gotta try to be the masters of our own destiny. And Netflix is doing the same thing. They're like, okay, we get it. You're not going to give us any more content. We're going to have to create our own. So I think there's tremendous opportunity for movies. I just don't – I think the distribution model is a little bit broken.
And there's also one thing, and that's kind of what Vanity Fair has done really, really well consistently, is curation.
Yeah.
And I know through my kids, again, like on Netflix, there's a lot, and how they'll spend 20 minutes like trying to decide and then they'll choose nothing because they can't decide. It's like going into a candy store and saying you can pick one piece of candy and they kind of – it's like a system overload. So I do think that there is still – there's still a lot of room for curation and for, you know,
for sure.
People – what, you know, this is what you should be interested in, this is why.
Yeah.
And it's not it's unexpected and some of it is very expected. But I do think that that is a super important piece of the equation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's what Disney's going to do very well, right? Because they have a very vertically integrated brand that they can, you know, you go there, you know what you're getting. And then all, and then the Hulu brand or however they break it off will be more like Netflix and more, and probably have that problem a little bit less curated, but still have that quality control of the Disney brand. And that's why Bob's been very smart, is he's sort of vertically integrated that. And I think that in terms of the stuff we're all going through, it's just a matter of just keep being talented and keep being authentic, which is – your writing definitely has that. And I what I love about you the most, and I think that what you said about Graydon, is you are a fangirl for sure. I follow you on social media. It's like you and Jennifer Lawrence might be my favorite. Like I might want to have to write a road comedy for you two guys. So I think that there's a – you feel that genuine love of the business and you feel like you're rooting for them, which I think is great. And so if you were now – you are now. If you were trying to get into the business now as a young lass in New York who is going to go and work at the phones, what advice would you give for people who either want to be just in the content creation business like you are or I am, just not specific to the movie business, television business, or journalism, just what advice would you give somebody who's like, I would love to figure out how to create content and be authentic and find my voice?
You got to start creating content. I mean, that's the thing. Like, get a microphone, get, you know, get a headset. You can order it for $100. I think that, you know, when people say, I want to be a writer, we'll start writing. You know, I didn't come at it that way. I just knew what I liked and I knew things and I had a good eye. I had a really good gut for knowing what would work and what wouldn't work. But I think it's just all the same basic principles. You know, one thing, and I credit David Geffen for this, and I have yet to actually ask him if he said this, but I do credit him for this because I credit David Geffen for everything.
Sure,
I'm not,
me too.
I'm not an idiot.
Exactly.
But he, it's this thing. It's like when you every day wake up, look in the mirror and ask yourself, what are you pretending not to know? And I think that's so powerful.
Yeah.
Like, and it's basically be honest with yourself. Understand what your skill set is. Understand what you want to do. And also for the young people coming up, there's no wrong decision. Just like go in, get a job, get a paycheck,
right.
And see what that's like. Go into a business. If it's not your first choice, well, then, you know, take the job, work with people, see what the world is like out there. And you're going to change so many different times. I mean, you're going to think you're doing one thing and then you're going to be doing another thing. So I really think that you just have to go for it and really take a lot of shit. Don't be entitled.
Right.
You know? That's one thing that I didn't let a lot of ridiculous stuff land on me. I just kept moving.
Right. When you're interviewing somebody and you're asking questions, what's the most important thing that you think about? Because as people are coming up and they're trying to learn, I think questions are so important. And I think the kind of questions you ask and the approach which you take and the kind of demeanor that you have, like you're definitely not a gotcha person. Like you don't set people up and knock them down. What if you're in an interview in any situation, whether you're trying to gather information from a mentor or do an interview with Jennifer Lawrence or Tom Cruise, how do you approach it? And when you're in it, what are you thinking about?
Well, the first thing I would say is 10 minutes early is on time. Don't ever be late. Don't waste anybody's time because no one needs you. You know, so be mindful of that. Also, if you're going in to meet Todd Garner, look at his IMDb page, see if he has a Wikipedia, see if anything's been written about him. Then look at his films and maybe rent a couple and watch his films and see. Come in with information. Same thing for Vanity Fair. Like I can tell immediately when someone hasn't read the magazine or they're just looking for something they don't, you know, they're coming in because they think it's glamorous and you have a big Oscar party and all that stuff. It's like, no, do your research. Come in, know what the brand is, know where you want to work, have information and have an opinion about it. And don't be afraid of that opinion. And also ask a good question. Think of one really good question. It's like we always have that with an actor when the movie or the play wasn't great and you're like, oh God, I got to go see him backstage or oh, I got to see him outside at the party. What's the one thing I can ask here or talk to them about that won't be disrespectful, will be honest, but also, you know, what is that one thing? We think about it, right?
Right. Great advice. Thanks. Love you so much. Thanks for coming and doing this. All right. Thanks
so
much.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Producer's Guide. We're produced by Katie McEwen, Kirsten Woodward, and Steve Delamater. I want to answer all your questions about the business, so make sure to tweet me at Todd_Garner or use hashtag Producer's Guide on Twitter. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner. Download new episodes every Thursday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts.
Well, with the proliferation. Well, with the proliferation of Marvel movies and all these huge sequels, it seems as if that is what the American public certainly wants, if not the worldwide. F*** me. But with the
Everyone's favorite housewife is back, and she's ready for round two. Step into Heather Dubrow's world now twice a week on Podcast One.
I loved it.
Heather's bringing you more of what you love, like YouTube's Glow Zell.
And now you got a beautiful, healthy
she's
girl
healthy.
Who's going to hate you in 13 years, and you're going to go, do you know how much I paid for you?
Roll the tape. Roll the tape.
Do you see?
Check out Heather Dubrow's world every Thursday and Friday at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Also, remember to rate and review.